The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
The House gets busy, passing bills to avert a government shutdown and restructure the U.S. Postal Service, plus chip shortages drag down Honda and Toyota, and Canadian truckers block a bridge linking the U.S. and Canada as vaccine mandate protests spread beyond Ottawa.
It's the busiest border crossing in North America. Any significant bottlenecks there could exacerbate an already tenuous supply chain.
It's Wednesday, February 9th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The House has voted to fund the U.S. government through March 11th, a step toward averting a potential government shutdown next week. The stopgap funding bill now heads to the Senate, where negotiations on an omnibus spending bill are underway. Meanwhile, the House has also passed long-awaited legislation to reform the U.S. Postal Service. That bill, which received broad bipartisan support, aims to right the mail carrier's finances by removing a requirement that it pre-fund retiree health benefits. It also requires postal workers to enroll in Medicare at age 65. That change alone would save the Postal Service about $36 billion over a 10-year period, according to Postal Service estimates. Japanese automakers Toyota and Honda are warning that there is no end in sight to semiconductor and other supply problems. Both carmakers reported a drop in quarterly profits, with Honda's falling 32% compared to a year earlier, while Toyota's dropped by a more modest 5.6%. Our reporter in Tokyo, Sean McLean, says Japanese automaker profits are facing several headwinds.
In contrast to GM and Ford, who are both predicting sharp increases in production, Japanese carmakers like Honda and Toyota are saying it's too early to tell when the shortage might start to ease. They also said a resurgence of COVID infections from the Omicron variant are leading to labor shortages, further increasing their struggles to keep the lights on in factories.
But there are moves to improve global chip production. The European Union has proposed $49 billion in additional spending for research and new chip production facilities. The proposal would also give the Commission power to demand that companies give priority to specific products where there is a shortage. The plans resemble similar proposed investments from the U.S. and China. And LinkedIn is considering allowing users to mute all political posts on its platform. Some U.S. users can already click a No Politics button to filter out content about political parties, candidates, and more. But as CEO Ryan Roslansky tells the Journal's Joanna Stern, the company could roll out the feature to more users.
I would love to see how people use it, if they find it effective, if it's helping them better accomplish what they're trying to accomplish on LinkedIn, and then if that makes sense, we'll roll it out to more.
And if it's nonstop crypto news that's cluttering your LinkedIn feed, there's actually a process for weeding that out, too. For Joanna Stern's full interview with Ryan Roslansky and tips on decluttering your LinkedIn, head on over to WSJ.com. New inflation data out this week is expected to show yet another jump in consumer prices. It's likely Americans will soon have to pay more in borrowing costs, too, after the Fed's expected interest rate hike next month. Though if you thought that meant deposit rates for bank savings accounts would also go up, think again. Here with a look at why that is Journal reporter Joe Wallace. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Luke.
Joe, break this down for us. Why aren't deposit rates expected to rise in tandem with interest rates?
Banks don't have much incentive to raise the interest rate that they pay to depositors right now because the banks themselves just don't need the money. When the government flooded the financial system with stimulus during the pandemic, it plumped up deposits held by customers and also by companies. And that means that commercial banks have huge deposits at hand that they can plow into their loan businesses already without needing to raise rates to bring new deposits in. So before the pandemic in early 2020, total deposits at US commercial banks stood at around $13.3 trillion. That's since swelled to $18.1 trillion.
This is all a bit depressing, I think, for anyone hoping to get even a minor yield from their savings account, because deposit rates are really, really low right now, are they not?
Yeah, they're very low indeed. The average rate on a savings account at the largest US banks stood at about 0.06% at the end of last year. That's according to bankrate.com. Many high-yield saving accounts, which were offering about 1.5% or more before early 2020, offer rates of around 0.5%.
So, Joe, are even moderate interest rates a thing of the past, or could there be a scenario that would lead to high interest rates on savings accounts returning eventually?
Yeah, I mean, so industry watchers and insiders say that the kind of maximum deposit rate you're going to get in this interest rate hiking cycle is lower than those which we've seen in previous cycles. That said, that there are scenarios that could lead to at least a small bump up in rates. One is that deposit customers start to move a chunk of the money into higher yielding investments, which could then prompt banks to raise deposit rates to keep them as customers.
Is there anything else that banks would be waiting on in order to possibly increase these rates again?
Yeah, if banks need to make more loans, then deposit rates could rise. Low rates and lackluster demand from borrowers for much of the pandemic put deposits and loans out of whack, but that is starting to change. Banks reported higher loan demands in the final quarter of 2021 in the recent earnings season, and most expect that trend to continue this year.
That was Journal reporter Joe Wallace. Joe, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, a protest by Canadian truck drivers against the country's vaccine mandates has morphed into something a lot bigger. We'll look at how Canada lost control of its capital and why these protests could inspire copycat movements around the world after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Protesters fighting COVID-19 vaccine mandates in Canada have stopped traffic on the busiest international land border crossing in North America. This as a nearly two-week demonstration in Ottawa threatens to expand beyond the capital. With more than 500 trucks occupying the city, officials have declared a state of emergency and are resorting to increasingly aggressive tactics to restore order. Paul Vieira is a reporter at the Journal's Ottawa Bureau, and he joins us now with more. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
What is it like in Ottawa right now? Some people are calling what's happening there an occupation. Is that a fair description?
Downtown Ottawa is basically a parking lot for heavy-duty trucks right now and other SUVs and pickups. These vehicles are plastered with signs and banners demanding freedom, an end to vaccine mandates, and rather untoward language targeted at Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. At times, the downtown has taken on a bit of a block party atmosphere. As for the term occupation, that's the term that's being used widely by residents and city councillors. It's fair to say that downtown residents I've spoken to are at their wits' end. They say it's affecting their mental health, their sleep. The police chief, along with some other city councillors, have escalated their language. They're now calling it a siege and an insurrection, although I have to add a note of caution that to date, there have been no major incidents of violence so far.
And those protesters say they're not going to go home until the Canadian government ends vaccine mandates and eases social restrictions. How is that going down with the Canadian public?
I'll tell you that polling has indicated that a fairly robust majority of Canadians are on board with the vaccine mandates. They've been imposed by the federal and regional governments, and those include everything from requiring documentation to show you're fully vaccinated to enter restaurants, bars, and gyms, and a requirement to be fully vaccinated to fly or board a train in Canada. That being said, I do think there's a growing sense in the country that perhaps it's time to learn to live with COVID-19, and there are some public health officials that are starting to lean that way. However, the Prime Minister and his officials have been clear that they have no intention to drop mandates or change policy because of a group of upset truckers that are parked in the downtown Ottawa.
So if the government isn't planning to back down, where does that leave things?
It's going to be interesting to see whether the crowds and number of trucks downtown, the number of trucks right now are currently estimated at 500, whether they start to dissipate and thin out. It's fair to say this might be a waiting game with police. We have the police now moving into a more aggressive to try to bring an end to the protests. They're trying to beef up enforcement. And perhaps the most telling move is their efforts to confiscate or stop people from bringing fuel to these trucks. It may be that this is going to last still for a few more weeks. And I know that some of the truck organizers had put out a video asking for people to come back, especially for the weekends.
And Paul, these protests are now even getting support from some prominent U.S. Republicans. What is going on there?
The police chief has warned that these truckers and supporters in Ottawa, they're benefiting from significant foreign financial help and coordination. And the police chief mentioned the United States. We have to be careful, though, because the police chief has yet to provide any evidence of this. But we did have GoFundMe, the crowdsourcing website. They shut down a fundraising drive by these truckers because under pressure from the city of Ottawa and Ottawa police, they shut it down because they said it violated their terms of service. And this was no longer a peaceful protest in GoFundMe's view.
Paul, given that officials in Ottawa have described this as an occupation, I wonder if there are any parallels here to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol and whether these protests have begun to inspire similar protests elsewhere.
On the latter point, we're starting to see some trucker protests in other countries. New Zealand and Australia come to mind. The main organizers of the Ottawa protest have said that they are receiving support and moral support anyway from abroad, from the U.S. and elsewhere. I know that part of the police strategy at the beginning was to avoid anything like January 6th event, and protest organizers have repeatedly said that they want a peaceful protest here. They've told supporters, they've told people here, we do not want to escalate, walk away, don't get in a confrontation with the police. So on that front, I think law enforcement has done a good job. Where the criticism from the police and elsewhere is like, why are these people still here? What's the exit plan? I think the January 6th worries were very legitimate, but I guess now it's when do these truckers and their supporters leave the Capitol?
Paul Vieira is a reporter at the Journal's Bureau in Ottawa, Canada. Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you, Luke.
And finally, the Winter Olympics is in full swing, but that fresh powder you're seeing may not be as fresh as you think. In fact, the Beijing Olympics are the first Winter Games to rely entirely on artificial snow, as the Games are taking place in one of China's driest regions. Sports ecologist Madeline Orr says this isn't just a challenge for China, because as the world gets warmer, other host cities may need to resort to using fake snow too.
The amount of snow guns that would be needed to produce the snow for that for a day is roughly equivalent to like a small farm building, yeah. The problem is there is no perfect sustainability when you're producing a winter event in a summer destination. And so no matter what you do to be more energy efficient, the design of the event is unsustainable.
Here's hoping the Italian Alps can make it snow naturally for the 2026 Games, because if they can't, we're definitely in trouble. And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.